and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. Legendary TV game show host Bob Barker has died at the age of 99. His publicist says he passed away peacefully at home and he had a beautiful life. Television and popular culture professor Dr. Robert Thompson at Syracuse.
This guy was a household name for generations on daily in many of those years. And of course, various other things became associated with him. Have your pet spayed or neutered was something that people heard as a Bob Barker catchphrase, even if they'd never watched any of his game shows.
Drew Carey, the current host of The Price is Right, posted on the platform formerly known as Twitter, saying there hasn't been a day on set that he didn't think of Bob Barker and thank him. Now to the nation's capital.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
60 years after the massive gathering for the March on Washington at the Lincoln Memorial, activists today are discussing how to move on with the fight for human and civil rights, with some saying the clock has moved back rather than forward on many issues. Alexis McGill Johnson is president of Planned Parenthood.
We know that the same states that are banning abortion rights are also blocking our ballots. We know that we are stronger together, bolder together, and that our arms must be linked because our fates and our freedoms are intertwined.
The U.S. shouldn't worry too much about Hurricane Franklin, though there may be some fallout, says Larry Kelly at the National Hurricane Center.
The main concern to the U.S. really for Franklin is going to be swells and rip current risks along the East Coast. So even though it's going to be a long ways away, I can still create dangerous surf and beach conditions.
In Boston, Mayor Michelle Wu is speaking out after at least seven people were shot at a parade that is part of the city's Caribbean Festival. Police have arrested several people who weren't part of the event.
Just heart-wrenching to hear that a treasured community event has been disrupted by acts of violence.
Joy in the space community after an international crew blast off from the Kennedy Space Center.
I'm Peter King of the Kennedy Space Center.
7 million pounds of thrust on Falcon 9 taking crew 7 to the International Space Station, now traveling almost 300 miles per hour.
Three astronauts and a cosmonaut are safely in orbit after a letter-perfect middle-of-the-night launch from Florida.
Thanks for the ride. It was awesome. On behalf of Andy, Satoshi, Toshi, and I.
Commander Jasmine Mogbelli and her crewmates represent four countries, the U.S., Russia, Japan, and Denmark. They'll dock with the International Space Station Sunday morning to begin their six-month stay. Peter King, CBS News at the Kennedy Space Center.
King reports that the mission almost didn't get underway over concerns about a possible fuel leak. This is CBS News.
At Staples, school savings are always in session. From art supplies and essentials to the latest tech, in stock and priced low. School on, save on at your local Staples store.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A tax evasion case in Wisconsin is shining a light on the ongoing exploitation of marginalized construction workers. More from Mike Moan.
Gustavo Reyes was sentenced to 18 months in prison after pleading guilty to tax evasion charges. The Department of Justice says Reyes has more than $500,000 in unpaid taxes. Rob Kale of the Construction Business Group says it goes beyond hiding income from the IRS. Reyes was considered a labor broker who served as a middleman between larger project contractors and those hired to work on sites. Kell notes that Reyes's actions align with bad actors in the industry.
In the facts of this case, what they do is they'll just create multiple LLCs to keep evading tax collection. They will label every single person working for them who clearly are their employees, but they'll label them all as independent contractors.
He says workers become exploited in the process because they're paid in cash and are excluded from full wages and benefits, and many are migrant workers fearful of speaking up. Unions say payroll fraud convictions for the trades are rare in Wisconsin. Kale acknowledges not all agencies have investigative resources, but he hopes the sentencing creates more awareness. Bert Johnson of the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters says the outcome should serve as a wake-up call to the industry as well.
The people at the very top making decisions about how the workers are going to be treated on their projects, those are the people who need to pay attention to this case.
Cal says it's not just the workers who suffer. He says firms that follow the rules are outbid for projects, while also noting that taxpayers eventually feel the pain. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bird on a Wire. I'm Lou Ann Bird, your host for this podcast, along with Civic Media. We are here in my lovely backyard, and my guest is Tanya Atkinson, who is the executive director and CEO of Planned Parenthood Wisconsin. So the issue tonight is going to be women's rights. So let's talk about women's rights. Tanya and I go back a long ways.
We go back a long ways. I am so excited to be here. I'm like really excited. It's nice to see you. We go back, about 20 years.
In Oshkosh.
Yeah.
When I was running for public office. I wasn't even running yet then.
No.
We were just getting together because we were concerned about women's issues.
Right. So.
And I can remember sitting around in, you know, the living room with a bunch of women from Oshkosh. And I think at the time we were worried about abortion rights for teenagers was on the
chopping block at that time.
And then what else
compassionate care for rape victims was a big one as well. I think that was the Oshkosh group that you belong to really took the issue and ran.
Yeah, they did.
Which was critical. So,
they did. So then I never would have thought we'd be where we are today.
No, me neither.
So tell us about what you're doing and... I may have questions for you.
All right. I would love it if you'd ask me questions.
Of course.
Of course. Well, I'm very, very happy to be here. If you don't mind, what I would love is just starting out by telling people about Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin.
Yes.
And what we do.
Yes.
And the services that we provide, the education that we do. Planned Parenthood Wisconsin has 22 health centers across the state of Wisconsin. And we provide a very wide range of reproductive healthcare services. Anybody can go to our website at www.ppwi.org. That website again, ppwi.org, to find in more detail. But I'll share a few of the services that we've learned over time that people aren't as familiar with. So, of course, people are familiar with, birth control, STD testing and treatment. We do, well person exams, PAPs and, the exams a lot of people are familiar with. We have a lot of services that we realize people are not as familiar with. So we have a wide range of cancer prevention and intervention services. So we do breast and cervical cancer screenings. We also provide colposcopies and LEAPS. And colposcopies and LEAPS are the next two steps if somebody has an abnormal PAP results. So that's what those are. We also do a number of biopsies when people are in and if it's indicated. We provide the HPV vaccination. And then we also do testicular screening as indicated. So so there's a wide range of cancer prevention intervention work that we do. We serve men or people who are assigned male at birth, depending on, somebody's gender identity. A lot of people don't know that. And we're seeing more and more over time. Main service STD testing would be the main service. We have recently expanded our services to include gender-affirming hormone therapy, and that's available at all the health centers across the state, as well as via telehealth, which is another service that we have that a lot of people don't know about. We have a very, very large telehealth program. We can send people's contraceptive method through the mail. Every contraceptive method except for a LARC, which is a long-acting reversible contraceptive. The most common one people know are IUDs, right? So we can send people right to their front door, that access. So somebody can jump onto telehealth and receive, did that to reduce barriers, to accessing care. And then our most recent service that we added was vasectomy services at our Water Street Health Center in Milwaukee. So those are the services that we provide, the healthcare services we provide. Exceptional team of people, great leaders, great medical leadership that we have on our team. And then, of course, we also provide a lot of education services across the state. So that ranges from, we have a very large professional education conference every year where they offer continuing education credits for different professions. To direct education with young people in schools or group homes or, wherever the need is. And then the last thing I will mention, is that we have a very large Spanish speaking health promoter program. And that's also statewide. So lay promotores, they're leaders in their community. We provide information and, a training program and, support, and the program they co-created with the Medical College of Wisconsin. I mean, when I say co-created, like I'm talking sleeves rolled up, sitting at tables, co-creating this curriculum. And that has been, that then they're about to celebrate their 20th anniversary, which I'm super excited about. So that's a real big picture view, but I'm happy to dig in on anything you want to dig in on.
Number one, what does it cost to use your service?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, we don't turn anybody away. So let's start there. The vast majority of our patients, have Medicaid, some form of Medicaid is their form of insurance. And if people don't have insurance, they should still come in anyway. Because we can work with folks to, if they are eligible for insurance, help sign them up. We take all forms of insurance, right? So all of those would ultimately be, covered under whatever the insurance is, right? Okay. And then we also have a patient assistance program. So for anybody who isn't eligible for any form of insurance, we have a fund where we can provide the services at a 75% reduced cost, and then we can even set up a payment plan. So nobody's turned away, and we work with folks to. To see if they maybe are eligible for some healthcare coverage, and which then provides care beyond even Planned Parenthood's walls. So
where do you get your funding to provide?
Well, so we're a healthcare provider. So like all other healthcare providers, we get reimbursed via Medicaid. We get reimbursed from health insurance companies, and a lot of people. I'm going to emphasize that. I hear a lot of people say to me, "Oh, I'm so sad that I had to leave my provider because I got health insurance." It's like, "Oh no, nope, you don't need if you love your provider at Planned Parenthood and you have health insurance, we accept virtually every form of health insurance that's out there in Wisconsin." So the reimbursement for medical care is the largest amount of work that we do, and so the largest amount of resources and reimbursement we get. And then we also have incredibly generous supporters as well. Yeah.
I'm thinking that.
Yeah.
So do you get any government funding then outside of the healthcare?
We do not.
There used to be.
Correct. We used to have what was called Title V funding from the state. which was a state family planning program. And we used to have Title 10 funding from the federal government, which was the federal family planning program. We have received a few grants over the last few years to do COVID work, some COVID outreach. Our promotores did a lot of Spanish language COVID outreach, for example. So we have received some government grants, but with regard to ongoing medical services, we do not receive Title V. The state of Wisconsin passed a law that would not allow Planned Parenthood to be eligible for Title V. And then between state law and federal laws, even though we had a Title 10 grant for about 40 years, it's 40 years. Planned Parenthood Wisconsin no longer has the Title 10 grant either. And in fact, the loss of the Title 10 grant is what we made a mission decision, because the majority of individuals who needed the resources that Title 10 provided were people who weren't eligible for any kind of insurance, Medicaid, any of those things. And mostly they were folks who had immigrated to Wisconsin. So we made a mission decision to start the Patient Access Fund.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did that funding get cut?
Well, so Title V, the state passed a law that made us ineligible.
And by name?
I don't know. But any organization that provides abortion or something, okay. I think is the language, right?
So it was the abortion.
It was
the,
yep.
And that they were going after.
Well, no, because there's no public dollars used
for
abortion services, right? So. So it was just another sort of chipping away. And Title 10, the state passed a law, requiring the state of Wisconsin to apply for the grant. Even though they hadn't applied, before. So the Department of Health Services is now required to apply. And, enacting that law also coincided with a gag rule that the Trump administration had put into place. So the two combined resulted in Planned Parenthood not being able to access those publicly funded family planning services. And again, I'll say it's those are all prevention services. So it's family planning, it's STD testing and treatment, it's cancer screening. So none of that had to do with abortion at all.
I got to thank you for what you do. And how long have you been doing this?
Oh, boy. Huh. Well, I just celebrated my 19th anniversary at Planned Parenthood, which time really flies when you're having fun. I started out as a community organizer, which is when we met.
Okay.
So I've had a variety of roles over the years. And then about 6 years ago, give or take a little bit, I threw my hat in the ring for the president and CEO role when my predecessor retired.
So 20 years, it's a tough job. And I, for those of us who really support your work, it's admirable what Planned Parenthood employees, associates have to put up with just to do your work. So I want to take a minute just to acknowledge that there's some of us out there, and I'm sure everybody here feels that way, that just thank you, Walk on Water, for taking it on for us.
Yeah, well,
we need that.
I mean, thank you. Genuinely, really, really appreciate that on behalf of our team. They do work very hard and with passion. And we have a value at Planned Parenthood. We say in this together, and we genuinely believe that we're in this together. So everybody here, we're in it together, everybody on the team, volunteers, supporters, we believe in this movement. Everybody has their role. And we on the team, that's our role right now. And truly, the energy, the movement, the momentum, all of those things, just really surrounds the organization, surrounds the mission. So thank you for acknowledging the team. And I'd like to pass the acknowledgement back to all the supporters like you that we have across the state.
So the biggest issue facing women in the state of Wisconsin right now is the fact that we lost access to a safe and legal abortion when they overturned Roe v. Wade. And I'm not so sure people know enough about the details of that, like the 1849 law, what it really is about. So that would be one thing to cover for us and maybe answer some questions about what is it, what happened. And then the second one is what's happening to women since then?
I'll do like a high level view. And then if there's a piece, just stop me if you want me to dig in somewhere. So, when Roe fell, so Wisconsin has had a law on its book since 1849. The way the law was written, it was unclear whether or not that law was enforceable. And essentially the law referenced abortion and providers and providers or somebody who would facilitate an abortion, right? It was a felony. It was jail time. It was, you know, up to, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of fines. That's huge. Providers, that's their life. It's their freedom. It is their livelihood. It is their license. It is their calling. It is all of those things. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, along with, you know, all the other health systems, suspended abortion services, across the state of Wisconsin. There's a very narrow exception for life I can't remember exactly the language of the statute, but it was something to the life of the mother. Of course, we also say, you know, life of the pregnant person as well. But that's undefined, which really is not much of an exception. Suspended across the state. At Planned Parenthood Wisconsin, the team had already developed an operational infrastructure, knowing, you know, that this was likely, and especially after the leak, it's believe them when they tell you who they are. It developed an infrastructure to help women and people across the gender spectrum who need an abortion navigate to other states. They're patient navigators. A number of people on the team started traveling to Illinois and working at the Planned Parenthood of Illinois Waukegan Health Center. And Wisconsin staff fully run the Waukegan Health Center one day a week on Thursdays. The navigators, real briefly, they can do a lot to remove, they can help make appointments, anywhere in the country. It doesn't have to be Illinois. Most people are choosing to go to Illinois, but anywhere in the country, they can help not only provide resources for transportation, but set up transportation if that's needed. Hotels, all of the logistical things the navigators really can help with. We do encourage people who need an abortion to still make an appointment at Planned Parenthood Wisconsin, because the team can also do some of the advanced healthcare work. So dating a pregnancy, for example, because one of the unfortunate things we learned from Texas, or what we learned because of the unfortunate situation in Texas, was that about 20% of people who had traveled to other states were sent back to their home state again, because when they got to the health center where they had Googled and made the appointment, they either had a medical condition like an ectopic pregnancy, so they had to go be treated for the ectopic pregnancy, or they were maybe further along in their pregnancy than what that particular health center would provide an abortion for. So the team can date the pregnancy and then help refer to the right health center, again, anywhere in the country. So if somebody has a support system in, you know, New York, and that's where they need to go because they have a support system in New York, then the team can help somebody get there. What they can't do is remove the barriers that is life, you know, right? I mean, the team really tried to build the system around the individuals who might have the least agency to to move. So you know, maybe people who might be in a criminal justice system, for example, right? And we learned a lot from the violence prevention community as well.
So people in the, break that down a little bit for me. The people in the criminal justice system cannot leave to go have an abortion.
No. I'm sorry. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, what we learned also from is if we build a system around, the people who are most marginalized, then it elevates all. Right.
Okay.
So we wanted to make sure that we did as much due diligence as possible. For example, understand from the violence prevention community, what might people need in order to safely leave the state, to access care. So that's what I meant is understanding from those systems. Correct. Yeah. What would be, you know, mechanisms that need to get put into place for people to safely leave the state.
So I'm thinking about, I try to have empathy, and that I'm thinking about a young woman maybe who has, for whatever reason, does not want to, she wants an abortion for whatever reason, but she's got three children at home and she's got a job and she just can't up and go to another state. Are you running into situations like that?
Yeah. I mean, there are so many, we first say anybody who needs an abortion for exactly only their reason. Right.
Yeah.
So if there's 20 people in a waiting room, there's 20 different reasons that somebody needs an abortion. And so the complexities of traveling are equally unique. Again, the navigators can help reduce some of those barriers if possible. You know, if for example, like somebody would lose pay for a day, they can help reduce, get the cost of the abortion reduced, you know, so to help offset that lost pay. So there's so many situations that people run into. And then there's a lot that we will never know about. People, and this is why I thank you for asking this question, because we really want to encourage people to contact the navigators. If you need an abortion, and have a conversation, and they can help. Yeah.
Well, that's a good reason also to give a donation to Planned Parenthood, because that directly will go back to the patients that might need services.
Yeah.
You know, it seems so removed sometimes from us that, you know, we need to hear the stories of what's happening. Now, some people, we're obviously in this position because a lot of people don't think a woman should have the right. So can you just, if someone asks, why should a woman have a right to an abortion?
I mean, you know,
that in your own terms.
I mean,
in terms of why should a woman have a right?
Well, I guess I would say abortion is healthcare. And, you know, people have a fundamental right to access healthcare. So because abortion is healthcare, people should.
Bottom line is it's a healthcare choice.
Bottom line, it is a healthcare decision. It's a healthcare decision that, you know, women and people across the gender spectrum should, need to be able to make, with, you know, for themselves, with their medical provider, with people in their family, if they want to have those conversations. You know, the reality is, that the decision of whether or not to have a child is one of the most profound decisions somebody will ever make. And those are decisions to be made with family, right? With your own agency, sometimes with your physician, depending on what, you know, the circumstances. So abortion is healthcare and people deserve to access that healthcare.
I've been a longtime member of the League of Women Voters, and I went online when I became the executive director for a couple of years there, and I looked the position we have against or for abortion and choice is stated, framed this way, which is the truth. A woman deserves a right to privacy in her healthcare choices. So you, as you said, it is a healthcare choice. And then, okay, so it is a healthcare choice. Does the government ever control healthcare choices? To some degree, sometimes it does. Not, I mean, when they're funding it, I suppose, but not when they're not. That's totally up to us.
I can't think of many statutes that are specific, and there probably are, right? I'm not a lawyer.
So freedom to choose is what this is all about.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it is. And so it's all the things, right? It is freedom. You know, it's freedom to make, you know, it's freedom to choose, freedom to make that decision.
A right to privacy.
It's all of those things, you know, and it is, pregnancy, you know, is very complex. And it is also, you know, it is also a health and safety issue as well. Again, people need an abortion for all of the reasons. And,
what are some of those reasons? Can we talk about those?
Bird on a Wire podcast will be right back after this. To listen to this and more uninterrupted, listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. The legendary Bob Barker is dead at 99. CBS's Steve Kathan.
If someone had told Bob Barker in the 1970s he would wind up hosting The Price is Right for 35 years,
I would never have believed it. Impossible.
Credit Barker's warmth for his success.
What did you say?
I said I want to kiss you.
My dear, that can be a... Ooh, wow!
And his hard work. He was famous for prolonging the moment of truth.
Now, how many dollars do you have left?
One.
Now, what does that mean you have to do with this last number?
Get it right.
Get it exactly right.
I don't know the prices, so I can tease them because I don't know whether they've won or lost.
Barker handed out more than $200 million in cash and prizes during his decades on The Price is Right. But perhaps even more impressive was the enthusiastic devotion he received from fans. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Allison Keyes.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Because the inmate was in their care and ingested drugs and died, they've been charged. Two Waukesha County jail staff members are facing charges in connection with the in-custody death of Randy Glenn Jr. at the jail in January. He was found unresponsive the day after his arrest. It was revealed that he had ingested plastic bags containing cocaine and fentanyl before or after his arrest. Both Nurse Deborah Link and Lieutenant Joanna Grace are charged with abusing a resident of a penal facility. In a statement, the sheriff's office expressed their disappointment with the charges. Spotting squads in Waukesha may soon be more difficult. Over the next few months, you'll start to see a new look to the city squads. They'll be becoming all black. They'll also start to incorporate new technology like updated lighting elements and other enhancements. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm, built for real life.
Civic Media isn't just another broadcast company.
We're your neighbors. We bleed green and gold.
And we love nothing more than to help fellow Wisconsinites succeed.
Whether your business wants to advertise to your local community or the entire state, Civic Media can help. Find out more at civicmedia.us.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi. This is Luann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
I mean, we can talk about them, but it really just depends on
everyone's
the individual, right?
Individual, yeah. Right.
So,
but for sure, we all have heard about rape, right?
Sure.
We've heard
mm-hmm.
about failed birth control, mm-hmm. lack of birth control. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can't afford to have a child.
Mm-hmm. The majority of people who get an abortion already have at least one child.
Okay. Wow. I wouldn't mm-hmm. have known that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. You know, so, and then again, pregnancy is complex. So, you know, so there are, you know, Planned Parenthood Wisconsin received many referrals from people who had, whose pregnancies were, medically challenged for whatever reason. And if we think
right.
about,
something's
yeah.
Something's wrong with the baby.
Something's wrong with,
be,
correct. Exactly. Yep. So, in vitro fertilization, our healthcare providers say abortion is the termination of a pregnancy for all the reasons, which includes sometimes with in vitro fertilization, there's a need to, you know, terminate a pregnancy, especially if there's multiple pregnancies.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So it's all of those things, you know, sometimes abusive relationships, really come into play as well, you know. So it's
domestic
the reasons
violence,
you talked about.
Lots
it's
of things.
Yeah.
There's lots of reasons.
There's lots of reasons.
It's not a simple decision on anyone's part. It's
correct.
Not a, so tell me then, what, I lost my train of thought there. So should there be exceptions? That was something that I wrestled with, and that over time we saw lawmakers continuing to put
right.
exceptions and
right.
rules in. Like
right.
now you have to have an ultrasound before you can get the abortion,
yeah.
forcing women
yeah.
to have an invasive procedure. Like
right, right.
How does that work?
So, well, so there's a couple of things, right? So the exceptions are, we've seen, lawmakers try to pass exceptions for rape or incest, for example. And the anti-violence community has been very clear that they oppose those exceptions. The reality is that each person's circumstance is unique and they need to be able to
pause. Let's stop for just a minute here.
Silver alert.
I saw that from there.
Close by. Okay, so this is right in Greenfield, just so you guys know.
Yeah, I saw it on the over when I was driving. They have a
oh, they do
a sign up. Yeah,
a white male.
Did anyone's phone not signal just now that we're waiting on? Did everyone's phone get it?
Mine's in the car, so yeah.
Then it should. That's very good.
Okay.
Holy cow!
All right. So.
So we'll pick this up now because she can edit
yep.
this
yeah.
part. I will take that.
So, okay.
The podcast. But we were talking about exceptions.
Exceptions,
yeah.
right. So there are exceptions. We've seen lawmakers try to pass exceptions. So, for example, exceptions for rape or exceptions for incest. And, you know, the anti-violence community has been very clear that they oppose those exceptions. The reality is each person's circumstance is unique. And people need to be able to make that decision for themselves. So, you know, so exceptions still do not give people the agency they need to, you know, to make those decisions. So there were the exceptions. That's one. And then there was a second part to your question.
First of all, before we move the second part, the exceptions, if a woman's been raped, she doesn't often want to talk about that. They're just trying to get to live with that violence that happened to them. So why should a woman? It sort of grinds me when lawmakers say, "Oh yeah, that's the exception." Well, then how does it work at Planned Parenthood? If that is now okay, but nothing else is okay.
Well, that I mean,
then you have to tell your story, right?
So there's two pieces of it, right? There's one is the right in front of us piece is. Those exceptions typically require reporting. And there are a lot of reasons that that most women do not report. Most people who are sexually assaulted don't report. So there's that piece of it. And in many cases, it can be more dangerous to report. So that's one piece of it. The second piece is then we get into, worthiness and unworthiness. And who's worthy enough, whose circumstances are worthy enough to access abortion and whose aren't, right? So it's an implicit judgment on different reasons that people may need an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody needs an abortion, they need an abortion. And it's critical that that is what people understand, is that people are not being judged for their reason for needing an abortion.
So when they walked into Planned Parenthood, was that question asked ever? Why? Or did you just service them? Right?
We people provided care. You know, of course, people share their stories. If they want to, and if people don't want to share their stories, they also don't have to share their stories.
So that's how it works.
Yeah.
And people
it's healthcare.
Think
it's healthcare. It's
through.
Yeah.
Because when I knocked on doors when I ran for public office this last time, I ran into very few people who, most people brought it up. It was a hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to see a woman's right to an abortion restored.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, oh yeah, especially for rape and incest, like that, like that's a separate category.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they understand the trauma. Separating them out like that sort of says it's okay for this group of women, but not okay for this group of women who may have different issues, but not exactly rape and incest, right? Mm-hmm. That judgment, like you said, in order to get to the end of that is amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazingly sad, really.
Yeah.
So how do we get, in my own thinking, I used to think, well, maybe that's okay to have some exceptions. You know, you compromise just to get something done, but I wouldn't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I say every woman has a right to privacy. It's her body. It's her choice. Should there be exceptions after a certain amount of time? What do you think? Like 6 months? What if someone's about to deliver? Should that woman have a right?
Well, so that doesn't happen. Okay, so that doesn't happen.
First of all, it doesn't happen.
So that doesn't happen.
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that. That is not a thing that happens, right?
Right.
So we need to dispel ourselves of all myth of, you know, abortion up until the day, you know, up until the day of, you know, of birth. So that's not a thing that happens.
Doesn't happen.
And you know.
So what the
language, compromise, to me indicates that, that there's like a middle ground on people having agency over their own healthcare.
Right.
That there's a middle ground, that somehow there's a middle ground over that individual being able to make their own healthcare decisions, and that politicians, and organizations, you know, go into a room and say, well, there's a middle ground on people having bodily autonomy. There are medical protocols and laws in place regarding, you know, like pregnancies, right? And late, you know, and, you know, and often, like pregnancy challenges aren't found until 20 weeks. So there are already, those, sort of medical guardrails in place, for, or those, it's more like medical protocols. Like those are already in place, you know, in the medical field. There's already, you know, laws about, you know, viability, right? So
explain that. The viability means if a
if a fetus could
can survive,
right,
outside the womb.
Correct.
What happens?
Well, I mean, again, it depends on the individual circumstances. But your question is about like, should there be time limits put on things,
right?
As like a political compromise.
Right,
and,
right.
And to me, even the language compromise, and I've been asked this question a lot about compromise, right? So I've had a lot of time to think about it. And, you know, so to me, even the language compromise, it sort of like denotes that there's two sides with equal validity.
Value.
when the reality is, it's not about sides.
Yeah.
It is not about sides. It is about human beings in the world,
human dignity,
bodily agency, and medical care.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to stay in the medical lane and out of the political sphere.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine having to police some of these laws. If you say it's only for rape and incest and someone has an abortion, and I mean, how are they ever going to know that and police that? I go back to what you said, though. It's a woman's choice. It's a woman's right at any point in their pregnancy. If something comes up, I know at one time.
So I want to be clear about at any point in the pregnancy, because that there are medical, like,
right.
There's like medical. So I don't want to. So I'm not saying at any point in the pregnancy. I'm saying that people need to be able to work with their physicians.
It shouldn't be banned, is what you're saying. You shouldn't ban it after a certain number of weeks.
It should not be a political decision. Right. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Shouldn't be a political decision.
It's got to be a private decision.
It's got to be a private decision between a woman and her physician.
And whoever.
Yeah.
Who is making that decision.
Correct.
Okay. So then the other question we talked about were some of the chipping away at how and when and all of that. A woman, mm-hmm. The one that really bothered me was the forcing of an ultrasound
mm-hmm.
before you could get an abortion. Is mm-hmm. that still in place?
Well, so no abortions are being provided
not in
now.
Wisconsin, but what?
And so the attorney general has a lawsuit moving now.
Tell us about that.
That essentially, argues that this law is unenforceable for insert a lot of different reasons, right? And so if this lawsuit is successful, and indeed that law is not enforceable, the law from 1849, we became a state in 1848, what's one of our first things we need to take care of in 1849? That's the law.
Yeah.
Anyway, side note, got quite the history here. So if that law is deemed unenforceable, then all of those other barriers and restrictions go right back into place. So in Wisconsin, so abortion will be legal if this is unenforceable, which we believe it is. And there's two ways. One is through the legislature for them to, you know, repeal the law, which they have not done and they will not do, our current legislature. And the second way is through the courts. So if the court says it's unenforceable, abortion will again be provided in Wisconsin. And all of those restrictions are back into place. And Wisconsin had some of the largest number of restrictions of any state in the country, pre-Roe falling. So glad you bring this up because, you know, as we think about the future, you know, abortion was legal in Wisconsin, but it wasn't always accessible.
because of all of those exceptions or those restrictions, I mean. So it wasn't always accessible. And we know that disproportionately inaccessible to, you know, people who, you know, may have limited financial resources, people who may have limited, you know, transportation resources, you know, rural women. And we also know, women of color, right? So there were, so in this moment, as the lawsuit continues to move forward, and people are thinking about, I mean, it is awful that Roe was overturned, absolutely awful. And that is now the reality that we live in. So, so we have to get abortion back in Wisconsin, and we have to do better.
We do, because didn't they have to close a bunch of clinics because they made them have to connect it to a hospital? I mean, one of that was one of the restrictions. I don't know that I understand it exactly.
Yeah, so that that did not, that a lawsuit struck that down.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good. And then the need for an ultrasound, that would come back into play.
Without a mechanism to remove those restrictions, those would all come back into play. So some of the, you know, some of the more challenging ones for patients, having to turn the ultrasound screen toward the patient, no matter the person's circumstances, right? Having to turn the ultrasound screen.
Wait, they put that in?
Mm-hmm. It has to be turned toward the patient.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Now the patient can close their eyes if they want. But the staff have to turn the screen. The 24-hour waiting period,
yeah?
Right?
That.
And it's never really 24 hours. I mean, I shouldn't say never. It's rare that it's only 24 hours between the individual's circumstances and their travel abilities and childcare and all those things.
Right.
The law also requires that, for medication abortion, the same physician who reads the state mandated script has to be the same physician who provides the medication. So most,
that's in case in the law here.
Correct. So you can imagine most physicians are fully practicing, have full OBGYN practices. And so to have physicians able to schedule exactly 24 hours from the time they read the script till the time they provide
these are things we don't think about.
Those are huge barriers for patients. So, you know, patients having to travel. And again, like you said, there are resources, when abortion is accessible back in Wisconsin again, those resources, there still will be resources that help with transportation and housing and all those things that was in place before, and able to expand it. And those barriers are all right back into place again.
So we'll get to the question of what can our listeners do? What can our audience do in a minute? But I do want to mention that, I often had to correct people that I am not pro-abortion, that I'm actually very pro-life. I just think the woman should have a choice. So language matters. Mm-hmm. And understanding that the difference between pro-abortion and pro-choice and mm-hmm. pro-life,
mm-hmm.
it's big to me. Do you find that as well?
Well, yeah, and I'm not trying to like hedge on the answer. I'm just going to say this. Like, it also depends on who the listener is, right?
That's true.
Because somebody That's might true. Say, I'm pro-abortion because I believe abortion should be accessible and legal, right? So it just it depends on the conversation.
They
and
go that route.
Right. It depends on the conversation. Like they could proudly say, like, yes, good. Because I think it should be legal and accessible,
okay.
right?
So you're pro-abortion.
What I would say is I think that there's no individual or group that gets to own the language pro-life.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so.
Okay.
I
think we have to ask a few questions to get to the bottom of that
yeah.
when you're having a conversation with a person.
Yeah.
You know, do you think the government should really control a woman's body? Sometimes you have to just kind of ask it that way. Or do you think that the government should really control our healthcare choices? Or should we be able to make those?
Yeah, right.
Without having to consult with an attorney.
Right. And that's what we really encourage people, you know, to do yeah. is to have yeah. conversations. This is a topic that is so easy to devolve into debate, and nobody really wins a debate,
You know, it's really important that we have conversations, because how we hear things might not, you know, it might not always be the way the person intended it to be said, right? So, for example, there are people that say, the topic of abortion, I'm uncomfortable with that topic. So if somebody would stop there, somebody might hear that as, oh, you don't support abortion. Saying, like, tell me a little bit more about that. Well, I'm uncomfortable with that, and here's why. And I strongly believe that it needs to be safe and legal and accessible.
Well,
so we want to have those conversations, so we're not shutting, so we're not only not shutting people down, but that we're recognizing that, oh, wow, okay, so we that is the thing that we share in common, is that abortion needs to be safe and legal and accessible to people. So,
The vast majority of people feel that way. 70-80%. Yeah. A lot of them. There's
a lot. Yeah.
I ran into very few that were really, for biblical reasons, had their opinions. And I think we have to be respectful and civil about those conversations as well, and not judgmental. But if the public good is going to be served, then we are, something's not right here. So what can we do if the majority of people feel this way? What can our listeners do? What could I be doing? Is there more we could be doing besides sending a donation to Planned Parenthood, which I just want to put another plug in for that. That always helps.
Yeah. So first of all, people are doing a lot, and I want to acknowledge that. People are activated in ways, you know, after two decades I have never seen before. And it is so moving. I get emotional when I think about it. So I think it's really important that people hear that what you are doing is absolutely making a difference. It's making a difference, like, you know, directly on the ground of, people engaging with each other, people knowing that their neighbor is also supportive, but we've never had that conversation before, but now we're having those conversations. You know, people are voting, certainly, right? People are, you know, having, I can't tell you how many house parties I've been to, not fundraising house parties, but small gatherings where people can have these conversations and learn more. There's like, how many emails that we've received about like a band would like to donate the door to Planned Parenthood, or somebody made these cookies to spread the word that this is an important topic, right? Like, people are bringing their full selves to this and providing their gifts and whatever that gift is, to this movement. So I want to say to all of those folks, keep it up. It really matters, and it's going to be a long road to get abortion back and to be better. How do we secure abortion access in Wisconsin, for generations to come? And how do we expand access so that people really can get to the care that they need? So keep it up. And, you know, and if you're like, oh, I haven't engaged yet. Great. Whenever you want to get engaged, there's a place for you. So ranging from we genuinely believe that having conversations with your network is the most important thing that you can do. And it sounds simple. But I'm sure we all have some friends. It's like, you know, not my friends that I talk about this with all the time. Not my friends that we might play euchre together. We might play sheepshead together. I grew up in the southwest part of the state. The card games are regional. We might play sheepshead together, but we really haven't had that conversation. So,
hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Homeownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
You don't have to live in Britain to get what the New York Times calls the best of British telly. Stream the UK's most brilliant series only on BritBox. Unlock acclaimed favourites including Vera and Stonehouse, starring Succession's Matthew McFadyen. Plus, don't miss upcoming original dramas like Archie, the story of Hollywood's greatest leading man, Cary Grant. Lose yourself in Britain's best entertainment, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
Hey, this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kindert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.